The CEO Challenge. One night while watching the evening news, we saw a story about the Japanese auto industry. Right there, before our eyes, was the chairman of Honda, Nobuhiko Kawamoto, with a rivet gun in his hands, building a Honda on the assembly line. He was then shown in the cafeteria eating lunch with the other workers on the line. At the end of the piece, he drove away in his year-old Honda Accord. Coming from auto worker families like we do, growing up in the hometown of General Motors, this was a strange sight. We can guarantee you, as sure as the sky used to be blue, that the head of Buick has not been near a rivet gun since he graduated from General Motors Institute. This is an actual college, by the way, in Flint, that used to do nothing but train GM managers and engineers. In fact, most of the heads of American companies are in these jobs not because they know how to make things, but because at one time they knew somebody who knew somebody, and they eventually proved that they knew how to ride the bottom line. They're graduates of places like the Harvard Business School, not builders or inventors or, God forbid, actual workers. Maybe, we thought, this is why so much of what is made in this country is getting more and more inferior. The guy in charge doesn't have a clue about what the company is really making, and he rarely has to use it himself. Perhaps the most embarrassing example of this lack of know-how was on February 4, 1992, when the CEO of the country itself, George Herbert Walker Bush, was dumbfounded when he witnessed an electronic checkout line in progress. As the clerk ran the UPC code on the loaf of bread over the electronic eye, Bush stared in amazement. It was as if the Martian leaders had just shown him how they make their heads spin around in a 360-degree whirl. You know, we had no idea that the rich and powerful are that stupid. How did they get to where they're at in the first place? We got to thinking, you know, it'd be interesting to see just how many CEOs could actually build, or for that matter even use, the very products they sell to the public. Could the head of Safeway bag groceries? Could the president of AT&T fix a downed power line? Could Leona Helmsley change the sheets? Thus was born the idea of the CEO Challenge. We began by making a list of corporations, their chairman, and what we would ask them to do. We promised that any winner of the CEO Challenge would receive a gold-plated putter and a putting green for his or her own private use. We started calling around and found it quite difficult to get these chairmen on the phone. If we were able to speak to an assistant or a public relations person, we would explain very simply what we wanted the chairman to do. They all thought we were nuts. But if you want to be taken seriously, even if you are nuts, you've got to put your concept in writing. A written request, for some reason, always gets a response. Once you've written the chairman a letter, you have started a paper trail that someday could come back to haunt an underling. The assistants always take a letter seriously. So here's how my letter read. Dear Chairman, if you're anything like me, in the past 10 years of hoopla over Japanese efficiency, you've never lost faith in plain old Yankee ingenuity. Likewise, you can probably imagine my surprise, which melted into dismay, but quickly went from there into defiance, when I read that many Japanese CEOs, like those from Honda and Sony, can actually build their company's products. And now they're going around bragging that they're somehow more connected than the American CEO because they know how to fiddle with whatever their company makes. I didn't believe it at first either. But my researchers, all Americans, have shown me the footage. Oh, it's true, all right. It's true. You may remember me as the director of the documentary Roger and Me. Well, recently, I've begun work on a new primetime magazine show, TV Nation, which will air nationally on NBC and internationally on the BBC this summer. I know that you'll want to respond to the gauntlet that's obviously been thrown to us by the Japanese, and we at TV Nation would like to help you. We're in a unique position to provide you the means of showing the Japanese and the world that you're just as plugged into your products as any country CEOs are into theirs. If you'll allow me and a small camera crew into your office or a nearby factory, assembly line, or laboratory, I know we can prove to the world that our CEOs are second to none. I know you won't let the USA down. I look forward to meeting you. I remain proudly American and sincerely yours, Michael Moore, Citizen. We sent this letter to the chairman of Chemical Bank and asked him to operate an ATM machine. we asked the CEO of Hershey to make us a candy bar. We insisted that the head of Estee Lauder give me a facial. Needless to say, the letters were all met with a negative response. We then followed up, telling a number of the companies that we would indeed show up on May 26, 1994, to personally ask the chairman to perform the job. With camera crew in tow, we were off. First stop was the New York headquarters of IBM. For some reason, the security personnel in the lobby would not allow us to enter, so we set up our props on the sidewalk. With my trusty bullhorn, I looked straight up toward the penthouse floor and issued my challenge. Louis Gerstner, chairman of IBM, come down and format this computer disk. There was no response. I continued the challenge. Do not be afraid. We come in peace. I held up the golden putter Gerstner would win if he formatted the disk. Still no bite. I even tried flattery.
We only use IBM and IBM-compatible computers. We despise Apple. Macintoshes are toys. They are not real computers.
You would think that that would have done the trick, but alas, Mr. Gerstner would not come down. Next, we went to the headquarters of Philip Morris, where we challenged the CEO, Michael Miles, to roll a cigarette. We brought with us a bowl of tobacco leaves, rolling papers, filters, and unspecified chemical additives. The guards became alarmed at our presence and locked all the doors to the building. For nearly an hour, no one at Philip Morris could leave or enter. We thought about all those smokers inside who legally couldn't smoke in there and badly needed to get outside to light one up. But we only thought about it for a second.
Mr. Miles, I belted out over the loudspeaker, I know this sounds like a stupid question, but what exactly did Philip Morris die from?
Many passers-by offered to roll a cigarette for us. Their speed and dexterity at this task was, to say the least, alarming. I continued my plea.
Do not be afraid. I am unarmed. Please come down and explain the phrase, I'm a joker, I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker.
Mr. Miles, in the end, was a no-show. We headed over to Park Avenue to the corporate offices of Colgate-Palmolive to see if we could meet the boss, Reuben Mark. Rebuffed once again by the front desk, we set up shop on the sidewalk.
Attention, attention, Mr. Reuben Mark. We need to know if you can do what your workers do. You are paid more than they are, and rightly so. We challenge you to come down and put the toothpaste in the tube.
2 hours went by, and no Mr. Mark. We then took our appeal to his employees.
People of Colgate-Palmolive, you all smell so good. Come out of the building so I can smell you up close.
A number of staff members actually came out to see us and let us smell them. We tried to enlist their help in getting the chairman to come down and see us. They suggested that maybe the toothpaste in the tube thing was a bit too hard. Why not have him wash some dishes with a little Palmolive? Hey, great idea, we thought. They went inside and soon came back out with the detergent. We went and got some dishes, dirtied them up, and in a way only those who work on TV Nation could, got a good suds going in the portable dish pan. The Colgate-Palmolive workers then set about doing the dishes. I went back on the megaphone.
Mr. Mark, we have met your employees, and they can do the dishes. Can you?
Maybe it was the fear of dishpan hands, because Reuben Mark would not grace us with his presence. We then got word from the Ford Motor Company that its CEO, Alex Trotman, would accept our challenge and change the oil in a Ford truck. Al Chambers, head of corporate communications for Ford, told us that while he thought it was a boring idea, his boss, Mr. Trotman, was perfectly prepared to do what's asked of him if they have some understanding as to why this would be visually interesting TV. We flew out to Detroit and went to the Ford Proving Grounds in nearby Dearborn. A garage was prepared and tools were organized in neat piles and ready to go for the challenge. Trotman drove up in his own car, got out, shook hands, and then got down to business. He placed a Ford Explorer on two portable lifts. Then he got out, he drained the old oil, he put the new oil in, changed the filter, and all of this in under 10 minutes. Auto workers everywhere would now enjoy seeing the chairman on his back with oil dripping all over him, doing the most manual of labor. For his successful effort, Alex Trotman received the golden putter and putting green. Trotman had his own TV crew there filming him. Ford played the footage of its chairman tinkering underneath the hood of the Explorer on monitors above assembly lines in every Ford plant in the world. Unlike the other chairmen who feared us and feared that we might pull some stunt to embarrass them, Trotman rightly took us at our word. He got a ton of mail and goodwill from those who watched the show. It should be pointed out that Trotman is not an American. He is from Scotland and grew up in a system that believes that unions are not such a bad thing and that companies should set an example of social responsibility. In 1997, when Johnson Controls, an auto parts supplier to Ford, replaced its striking workers with scabs, Trotman refused to accept any parts from that company, causing him to lose 2 weeks of sales of his popular Ford Expedition model. Johnson Controls backed down and rehired its union workers. This is not to say that Ford is without its faults, but when compared to that company we grew up with in Flint, hey, don't get us started. We already made that movie. After we completed the story, we felt that, in the interest of fair play and full disclosure, there was still one CEO we had to challenge. I dutifully took my bullhorn out to the middle of Rockefeller Plaza in New York City.
Jack Welch, chairman of General Electric, owner of NBC, please come down and screw in this light bulb.